Hi, this is Tim Lightfoot, the director of the Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance, and we're really excited to tell you about an event coming up. We hope that you're close enough or you're near one of our satellite sites to see it, and that's the Huffines Discussion 2013. And this is the one where we bring in guest speakers from all over the world that are going to tell us their big ideas about the role and the future of sports medicine and human performance. And so join us November the 15th, 2013, from 1 to 4 p.m. here on site at Texas A&M at the Annenberg Presidential Conference Center. You can also go on our website at huffinesinstitute.org, go over to the news and pull down to where it says Huffines Discussion, and you can find a list of all our satellite sites around the country that will be simulcasting the event at the same time. So join us on November 15th, 2013 for the Extraordinary Huffines Discussion 3.
From the beautiful campus of Texas A&M University, the Sidney and J.L. Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology brings you the Sports Medicine Podcast. Our mission is to make sense of and connect the science, practice, and application of the latest findings in sports medicine and human performance to the real world. Here's our host, the director of the Huffines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
Well, hello and welcome to the weekly edition of the Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance podcast. I'm your host, Tim Lightfoot, and I'm so happy that you took the time to download us and you're taking the time to listen. Every week we bring you an interesting person in the world of sports medicine, human physiology, human performance, and general health, and this week is no exception. So we're welcoming Mary Lynn Morris, who's a professor at the University of South Florida in visual and performing arts. Welcome to the podcast, Mary Lynn.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate being here.
Well, we're glad to have you here. Let me tell the audience a little bit about you, give you a little introduction here, sure. And then we'll just jump into the conversation. Mary Lynn has a Master's of Fine Arts degree in dance performance and choreography from Florida State University. And if, for those of you that have been listening for a while, you know that we've had several guests on that have worked in that program, and in particular Tom Walsh, who's been on the podcast before. She's been an instructor in the dance program at the University of South Florida for many years. She's a member of the National Academy of Inventors, the National Dance Education Organization, and the Florida Dance Education Organization. She's also a member and a regular presenter at the International Association of Dance, Medicine, and Science, and also a member of the Performing Arts Medical Association, which we've talked about quite a bit, PAMA, recently. Mary Lynn is here visiting at Texas A&M because of a variety of things, working with our dance science program. But in particular, we're going to start off and talk about, you initiated what's called the Rolling Dance Chair Project. So tell us what that is.
Sure. I'll try to do that in a relatively brief, encapsulated way.
We've got 25 minutes.
So the Dance Chair Project actually started, I began it in 2005, so this is now 8 years ago. And it came from two basic motivations. One was I had had a personal experience when I was 12. My father was injured in a severe car accident, which left him with a very complicated disability, both a brain injury and physical issues with that, like a seizure disorder and a lot of kinds of problems with the brain injury. And that experience then, you know, kind of turned my life upside down with my mom.
It was
just my mom and I, you know, kind of working through this process of change, literally happening in one day. And we, you know, did the best we could. But, you know, looking back, I mean, you know, you realize things that would have helped, things that could have facilitated, support systems that would have been helpful to be in place at that time. And this was actually before the ADA was in place. This accident happened in the 80s. So, you know, there were issues with that in terms of, you know, access and various kinds of things my mom and I really ran into and confronted straight on through this experience. So the caregiving experience with my dad has been a very foundational experience in terms of understanding and being connected with the idea, you know, the issues surrounding disability. And then a second motivation for me, obviously, is my dance background itself and being involved in dance and the creative arts and this world of creativity and almost illusion and sort of, you know, a very different reality in some cases. And so I was sort of these two worlds. I grew up sort of, you know, with these two worlds somewhat separate because my mom kept me dancing while we were dealing with this kind of trauma. And so I would go from the ballet studio, you know, and, you know, worrying about, you know, the positionality of the hands and the finesse of qualities in the body and movement and, you know, moving through space and, you know, again, often dealing with, you know, imaginative worlds and various kinds of things in terms of the ballet productions. And on the counter end of that, coming home and very directly dealing with some very functional and basic movement needs and trying to get my dad from, you know, his chair to the bathtub and things where that were just hard. He's a 6'2 man. There were issues with dealing with the chairs he was in and how to physically, you know, help him with things. So it was almost like living in a little bit of a sort of split worlds, right? Which I think to some extent, you know, we all do live in these kind of very disjunctive realities sometimes. But I think our minds, we want to integrate. We want to find ways of connecting. We want to find ways of obviously solving problems and things. So this is where I think the fusion came together for me when I also had begun in about the year 2000 working with a mixed ability dance company, dancers with and without disabilities.
Okay, that's what's called the mixed ability dance company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dancers with and without disabilities, Revolutions Dance, actually, in Tampa, Florida. And I was doing a lot of this work. And so, you know, as I was working with, you know, different types of bodies and obviously these individuals were coming in power chairs and manual chairs and various kinds of things, and I started seeing the sort of restrictions of the chairs in the sense that the dancers actually had a lot more capacity. I could see it in their bodies in terms of what their upper body could do, but the chair demanded that they control it in a certain way. They had to affix their hands to the chair to wheel through the space. And I kept thinking, goodness, you know, if there was just a way that the chair could actually allow them to be hands-free, for instance, and allow that the body could just simply initiate the movement and let the upper body and the hands dance or interact with others, you know, that may be a helpful another mobility option for them. And as I, you know, began to sort of think more on that as I was choreographing, as I was performing, I was also noticing that the chairs themselves also were designed from a particular perspective. They were designed, you know, generally speaking, to really just get a person from point A to point B, to get a person out of their house, so that a person with a disability wasn't, you know, isolated forever and not able to do things in society. So they were created with a very just basic functional need oriented, goal-oriented purpose in mind. And dance is a very different kind of thing. Dance, you're looking at expression, you're looking at how exactly someone traverses the space and how they're connecting with another person. How are they communicating with their bodies?
And that's not always linear.
Right. Yeah, and so, you know, there's this whole other creative world then of what the chairs could be doing to support those movement possibilities. So these intersecting things kind of brought me to wanting to initiate the project and look at reconceptualizing the design of wheelchairs from a dance perspective, and realizing also that in sports there are, you know, tennis chairs and basketball chairs, and so in sports, you know, people have begun to push those boundaries and say, hey, we need a different type of chair because this is what we're doing here.
Now, when you're talking about tennis chairs, you're talking about wheelchairs.
Wheelchairs that have been adapted in different kinds of ways to, you know, for instance, in basketball, they've, you know, the camber of the wheels has been changed so that the, you know, the turning is better and they're less likely to fall over. And, you know, various kinds of things like that for that particular need. And so thinking of it that way, but simultaneously, because of my dad's experience, also thinking of the chair design from a daily living perspective. So for me, as I move forward with it, it was always a sort of simultaneous, yes, I see it for dance, but I can also see it spilling out in terms of daily living because looking at the some common needs of accessibility, spatial accessibility, right? Like the ability to move side to side.
Well, just the hands-free. Operation.
Yeah, and the hands-free aspect. Yeah. So, you know, task-oriented things. Again, you're not bound to actually controlling the chair with the hands in terms of manual control or power joystick control where the hand is affixed in space, but that you're actually free and mobile and the control can be mobile. So, you know, I had originally actually approached some folks in the engineering department at the university that I was at. We began some slow experimentations. Some students were involved with that. By now, what I've gotten to is there were certainly some challenges in working within the university system.
For those of us that are listening, that are in the university system, we're all laughing right now because
there are definitely, you know, we have structures in place and a lot of them for good reason in terms of obviously there's educational goals, there's tenure goals for folks and various things. So, but some of those things inhibited my main goal, which was I need to get this thing built. I need right. to get this chair built, and I want it to get to people that it could help, that it could benefit, and open up new options and new movement possibilities. So at a certain point, I ended up contracting with a company outside of the university that had in some way actually come through. It was a person who'd come in through the university and then guided me towards this other person. So, and also funding was a barrier. You know, I had a little sure. bit of funding when I first started, and then, you know, applied for things and didn't necessarily always get them. So the project always also took time because of the funding aspect. But I did receive the Thatcher Hoffman Smith Award for Creativity in 2010, 2011. And that allowed me, plus a veterans reintegration grant that I had received from the University of South Florida, to move forward with this company in California and contract with them to actually build the chair from the ground up. Because up to that point, again, undergraduate students had been involved in kind of looking at different right. parts of the design, right. and I was guiding that process, but they were undergraduates, and they were here for a semester and gone.
And so no continuity.
There was no sustainability. There was no continuity. And there was even a lack of resources in terms of, like, there was only one machine shop on campus. It can only do so much, and, you know, various things. So for me, it was very much a choice of, if I want this to get done sooner rather than later, I needed to do something different.
Right.
So this occurred, and we had, you know, benchmarks for when things would happen. And we, the person I worked with in California, Mark Rumsey, we worked through a collaborative process together. And, you know, basically with me guiding the design in terms of what needed to happen and how. And I had done a lot of my own kinds of research previous to this in the very beginning in terms of existing technologies. And really the chair as it exists now is a fusion of existing technologies. And it's an integration of those kinds of things. So in my early research, you know, I had found segues and actually ordered segues as part of the beginning experimentation. And we looked at mounting seats on segues, and also had done a lot of research just on chairs in general, looking for to see if anyone had developed an omnidirectional chair, and was it on the market, or to what extent did it get. I found some beginning developments of those things, but nothing that was sort of brought to completion, and no chair or no existing apparatus that really embodied all the aspects that I wanted to bring together from the design perspective. So it really made the most sense to build from the ground up and work in this fashion. We worked for about a year-ish. And the chair had came down from California in 2012. And at that point, I had also done my own research to locate someone who could continue building these chairs, a chair manufacturer in Pensacola, Florida, Vertec, Inc. And I had developed a relationship with them and said, you know, are you interested? This is where I'm at with the project. They had known a little bit about some of the previous history and what had come about so far with it. And so they were interested. And so once it came down from California, I was able then to connect with them and say, okay, this is the existing prototype. And it was clear already that, you know, there were refinements needed to be made in terms of the programming and things like that. And so at this point, basically, Vertec is one company who's licensed the technology and is working with me very closely to upgrade the chair and to develop it further to reach its full potential. And also they are equipped to build multiple chairs. So this is kind of how the project has kind of moved through, and want to emphasize that throughout the whole process, individuals with disabilities that I worked with have been involved throughout the entire process. So it has not been working in a vacuum in terms right. of, you know, right. just, you know, close the room and you work on your own right. and come out. That's not how things come together well in terms of design. And right. so the whole process has involved multiple perspectives coming together. I certainly am the design leader and guiding the principles and things like that. It is coming from an arts and a dance perspective, which makes it pretty unique in that
right,
sense.
Right.
But there's also working with many types of disabilities, individuals with different types of disabilities, both in dance and outside of dance. That's been part of the research process. Them testing the rough draft chairs. One of the dancers I worked with, Dwayne Schuneman, he has a high-level spinal cord injury, and he's been kind of with me. We've worked together for like 10 years, and he's been with me from the beginning in terms of sort of trying one thing out and even testing out the first seat adaptation on the Segway. And, you know, which gave me indication, this has potential. You know, this is these things are this is a good direction.
And these are probably the sources of some of the videos that are out there. Mm-hmm, and for the audience listening, we'll put these links to some of these videos up on the website, up on the show notes, so you can go out and see what this looks like and how it's been used in some dance performances already.
Right, right. And it's relatively new. Like I said, came down in 2012. Then some refinements occurred over the spring 2013. And so I've only just begun really experimenting with this this finally sort of more fuller vision of the chair. The first thing I did was actually in May 2013, I brought down a dancer with a disability from New York, a dancer with disability from Canada, and then my Florida dancer, and through a research process, we worked together in the studio, and with them trying the chair, giving me feedback, working with it sort of in a dance context mostly, but also I asked them questions about, is this something that you think you could use for daily living? And in some cases, you know, they said yes, that certain aspects of it would be very helpful, like the side-to-side movement and this kind of thing.
Well, and that's the interesting thing. As you're chatting here, I'm thinking that that would be even a bigger application almost. I mean, because the videos that I've seen of it have been all focused around the dance context.
Right.
But then using this in daily life would be huge.
Right, right. And I'll explain a little bit about the features so that your viewers can maybe capture, you know, what exactly does this chair do and how is it different? So one big essential feature is the control system. The control system is mobile. It is a wireless control, and it happens to actually be a smartphone. And so the smartphone works in the sense that if you tilt the phone forward, the chair will move forward. If you tilt it back, the chair will move back. If you tilt the phone side or side, the chair will move side or side or diagonal, any direction. The chair is completely omnidirectional based on the wheel design. And this was one of the things I really wanted to achieve was omnidirectionality so that the person in the chair could traverse the space in any direction. And again, this really, I think, relates over directly into daily living because there is need for that, again, in terms of spatial access. Most wheelchairs can only go forward, back, and turn, and that is a limiting factor. So the control system, it can be handheld. It can be switched to a different hand. It can be held by a caregiver or a friend or a partner or another dancer
on
stage.
That might be a bad joke, though.
It could be. And the other thing is that in order to achieve the hands-free, the phone is wearable. So it's a wearable wireless control that you could wear on the chest, for instance, and then if you lean forward, the chair moves forward. If you lean back, if you lean a different direction. You could also wear it on the side of the body or even on the back of the body. And we've even tried wearing it on the head, for instance, because you can direct it easily with the head.
Yeah.
So here you get into the capacities that this kind of control would open for multiple disabilities.
Sure.
Right,
yeah.
For an individual who maybe only had head movement,
right.
This would actually work for them.
And if you were doing a ballet with a helmet, then you could just mount it in the helmet, right? No one would see
perfect.
It. Yeah,
perfect.
That's right.
Perfect.
I'm thinking of with the horns and all that other stuff, but that's a whole other.
Right. Well, and I'm trying to make it, you know, of course, as small as possible. So there is a way to mount it on the body that's not going to be, you know, particularly noticeable, or this, you know, this kind of thing. So the control system being one main feature, the omnidirectionality being another essential one. Another one is height. It has height change. Some power chairs do also have height change, but again, across the board, the sort of the general manual or power chair that's on the market doesn't always incorporate that. And I mean, I can't emphasize more the importance of something as simple as height change. Because what happens with the person in the wheelchair is they're always lowered in space. And so literally the standing person, right, which as we walk around and experience life in a standing body, the person in the wheelchair is always at a lowered position in space. We're always above them. So it creates a hierarchical power issue, whether we intend to or not. And so also often the person in the wheelchair is just not seen. You know, they're lower in the space, they're not seen. And in dance, again, if you're trying to create different movement dynamics and you can only have someone in a static position in space, you know, that doesn't offer any options in relation to a more three-dimensional movement experience. So the height, in fact, one of Dwayne, the dancer that I worked with, he commented in trying this chair, he said, you know, we've worked together for 10 years, but he said, you know, I didn't realize how emotionally powerful it was to really be at eye level with you, on a regular basis.
Sure.
Because you certainly have in dance people change their positionality, but just consistently to be actually at eye level.
Right.
And so again, just, you know, these movement features and things design is a very important thing because it impacts how we connect with each other and how we connect with each other on emotional levels. So it isn't just about the functionality of just getting a person from point A to point B to eat their food or something like this, but it's how are they getting through the space and how is that creating or limiting interaction with other people
right.
and with their environment
right.
in different ways, and how is that related to their psychology and our psychology, you know, as we connect.
Yeah.
So these were ideas that I was thinking of as developing the chair. And, you know, after my dad's accident happened, you know, my dad and I had previously had a very, you know, physical, connective, I mean, he would dance with me and, you know, do all these kinds of things.
I think I've seen some pictures yeah. with you on his shoulder, as a matter
yeah.
of fact.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I was used to that relationship. And yet then when he had the disability and then when he was in a chair, it was like, okay, well, what do we do? You
right.
know, like, what is our relationship right. In this sense? You know, how do I get around the chair?
Yeah.
And my mom is a caregiver, you know, also, I mean, all of a sudden the relationship, which was typically right side by side as a partner holding hands walking through space, becomes mm-hmm. I'm now behind you pushing mm-hmm. you through the space. And so that just sets up a certain dynamic and enforces a dynamic that I look at and I think, how can we rebalance that dynamic? So how can a person continue to walk side by side and hold hands with the person that in the wheelchair?
Right.
And with the phone control, you could do that because, again, the person could wear the control and be hands-free walking side to side, or the caregiver could actually be holding the control. And so the person wouldn't have to worry about, so say, directing their chair with the wheel control
right.
or something. And then this chair also incorporates footholds for the dancers to step on and off of on the corners. And it's a rather small base. Also, the seats are interchangeable. Mm. So, again, depending on the user, you could exchange the seat relatively easily. That was one of my main goals. And that came off of actually having a prototype of a chair that it was an existing chair that my dad had, and I really liked, my mom and I both really liked the fact that the seat came apart so easily from the base.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, this chair has got to have a seat that comes apart easily from the base,
yeah.
you know.
So the people that sit on this chair, you strap them in? Or I'm thinking about all the things that could happen with someone mm-hmm, who's disabled mm-hmm. and moving
right,
through different
right.
ways through space. And
right, right.
You don't want them falling out.
Sure, sure. Sure. So the seat that's on there right now, which is actually a clear kind of more circular kind of seat,
mm-hmm.
It sits the dancer kind of back and down mm-hmm. a little bit so that they do feel a little bit more secure in that
mm-hmm.
sense. And for the majority of people who've tested it, they've actually said, yeah, it's pretty comfortable and they feel secure in it and they don't need actually a strap.
Mm.
But depending on the disability, you in fact probably would need a strap depending on the seat.
Right.
But again, because you could mount different seats, you know, you could customize that according to the individual.
Right. Now, we're going to have people that are listening that are going to go on immediately when this goes up and comment and they go, okay, when can I get it?
Right.
You know, when can I get my loved one to get it? So
right.
what's production like? I mean,
mm-hmm.
have you started production and you want to tell us a price point? People are probably going out there, man, this may be $3 million.
No, I really wish that we were really that close. That would really, I would really be happy about that if I was that close to that point. But I think that it could move potentially more quickly. I've connected with, especially recently, some really wonderful potential partners
mm-hmm.
who could maybe facilitate the chair's development more quickly. I have a grant in right now with Paralyzed Veterans of America because I'm looking at the veteran applications as well. And if I do get that grant, I will be able to move forward with Vertec in Pensacola, Florida, and really continue refining this particular prototype, and they will be able to build several more at least. And at that point, I'd really like, from a research perspective, to get them out to a lot of different individuals to test.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had already a number of people email me and say, can I come at least test that you're being involved in the experimentation process? And
yeah.
that is great. I mean,
yeah.
wonderful. And so that can happen pretty immediately in terms of testing and even in terms of experimenting with it performatively and choreographically in dance. That is an easy kind of thing. As far as, you know, more of a large production of these, that will take a little bit longer. I'm hoping that some other companies become interested in licensing the technology, like maybe some other wheelchair companies, maybe like Pride Mobility or an Invacare or something that would actually be interested in moving it forward more quickly and saying, you know, this is a really good idea. Let's, you know, how can we partner? And so that would help it. I am trying to keep, in terms of price, under in about the same you know, under 5,000 and about in the same range as an average power chair. Mm. It is a power chair. Power chairs can range from anywhere from $3,000 to $30,000.
No, see, I don't know if the listeners know that, but I had no clue about that.
Yeah, yeah. So power wheelchairs can range, you know, anywhere from $3,000 to $30,000, probably more than that. But I'm trying to keep it, you know, within as low a cost as possible. And when I worked, as I've worked with various collaborators, the intention has been to choose supplies and everything else that will not be so specialized that we can't access them. And of course, you know, even the control is a, you know, an easily accessible item at this point. It's a smartphone.
Sure.
So, you know, I do think that there'll be the potential to keep the cost down for individuals. But as far as the testing phase of it, I mean, that I love to have people involved in that and even being able to get some prototypes to a dance studio who might do mixed ability work or an organization who does work with disabilities. This would be possible for them to work with it for a month or something like that. I think that could be a really nice phase where I'd get feedback from maybe different parts of the country and different types of organizations. One had some individuals contact me recently about they work with senior citizens in terms of Tai Chi and do seated Tai Chi. Mm. And they saw the chair and said, you know, I think this might be really nice for these individuals because they would be able to sense the movement of their upper body in connection with their lower body a little bit. And so because the chair would really move, you know, with them. Mm. And of course, Tai Chi wasn't necessarily an application I had immediately thought of, you know, seated Tai Chi, this is it. But, you know, that's where I think there are a lot of possibilities. And that's why it's helpful to get the word out there and for people to contact me and say, you know, yes, I'm interested, or have you thought about this, or, you know, something like that.
Well, I think this is a great example of something that has been birthed out of the performing arts or sports medicine world, that it can grow so much further than what it was originally intended to do.
And it can have
a huge impact on so many people out there.
Sure.
Well,
if I could say one other thing, too, because of your emphasis is medicine, you're looking at the medical connection, and the chair was also designed from a sort of therapeutic perspective, and that's a research piece of it that I'd really like to look at, because manual chairs, for instance, you know, as a long-term use option, really can create a lot of shoulder wear and tear and long-term chronic shoulder issues and injuries. And so that doesn't necessarily become a good solution for a person with disability. You put a person with a disability now in a chair that then creates another disability for them, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And with power chairs, they also are often rather sedentary. And so now you've got, you know, obesity and poor circulation issues developing and things like that. With this chair, because of the potential engagement of other muscles and the balance, what might happen proprioceptively in terms of stimulating, you know, riding reflexes and imbalance, I'm interested in seeing if it could be a nice option in that sense, as sort of from a therapeutic perspective, from a health perspective as well, a chair that would actually increase circulation, you know, stimulate neuromuscular connections in different kinds of ways. So that's that sort of health piece of it that I'm wanting to do more research with. And I've worked a little bit with some PT colleagues. Early on, we did a metabolic study looking at our chair compared with a power chair and a manual chair, and it kind of fell right in the middle. So then, you know, thinking about, well, if Medicare or something would ever be interested in you know, picking it up, that maybe they would see it as having this ultimately being a healthful kind of option for certain people.
Super. Fascinating project.
Thank you so much.
I'm getting the sign that we're out of time or getting close to out of time. And
thank you.
As our regular listeners know, we always give our guests an opportunity to give us a take-home message for the day. What would be your take-home message for the day?
One of my favorite phrases is saying that we are all only temporarily abled at any given time. And important to remember that, important to remember that disability is a global issue of concern, and that people continue to look outside their own experiences and always look towards putting themselves inside the experiences of others. That would be my take-home message.
Great take-home message. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
We've enjoyed having you here.
Really appreciated it. Yeah. Thank you.
And I want to thank all of you that are listening for taking the time to download us and listen this week. And again, regular listeners will know that now is the time that we have our podcast question of the week. And here with the podcast question of the week is our producer, Kelly.
What item is used to control the rolling dance chair?
So that's our podcast question of the week. Be the first one to send us an email with the correct answer at huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu, and you'll win one of those nifty podcast t-shirts. And hurry, the neon blue ones are going fast from what I am told. So, again, Mary Lynn, thank you for being with us.
Thank you
for
so
being
much.
At Texas A&M. We've
yeah,
enjoyed
absolutely.
Having you here.
I'm really happy to be here. I'm so glad Chris brought me in to teach dance.
Yeah, it's been fun to have you here. And again, thank you all for being with us. We hope that you join us next week for another interesting person in the world of sports medicine, human performance, and general health. And until then, we hope that you stay active and healthy.
Thanks for listening to the Huffines Institute Weekly Sports Medicine Podcast. This podcast was produced by Cheryl Marek and Kelly Selman and made possible by generous support from the Omar Smith family and the Sydney and J.L. Huffines family. This podcast is published under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. That means you can't sell it or change it, but feel free to give it to everyone you know and to talk and blog about us. And in case you were wondering, our openings and closing are provided by JohnMilesProductions.com, and our music was provided by Dave Zeltner. Find him on the web at DavidZeltner.com. And just so you know, we love hearing from you. If you have questions or comments, please send them to HuffinesPodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the Huffines Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.